Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
Listen, Nerd Right Radio!
Nerd Alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 7 of Nerd Pride Radio, number 7 being my third luckiest number. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. That's right, I am awesome. You know why? Because today is a great day. I am sitting in my dungeon mastering chair for the first time to record this, and I feel good. This is natural. My name is Mike, and you're listening to Nerd Pride Radio. Our sponsor this week is Norwegian Kitchen Outfitters. Whether it's lutefisk, rockfisk, or any other nasty fermented fish dish, Norwegian Kitchen Outfitters has everything you need. Ah, let's jump straight into it. On our regularly recurring feature, Mike was wrong. I gotta go back to last week's episode. Last episode, episode 6, I was discussing Disney princesses, and I said the following. There's lots of singing and dancing and a lot of dress-up and, you know, wearing fancy balls and waiting around for your prince to come. And as many of my listeners have been willing to point out to me, Disney princesses do not, in fact, wear fancy balls. I apologize. The error was mine. Also, as long as we're on the subject of it, last week's episode, I also mentioned that Joel thought that Bjorn Berg, our musical bit from last week, thought Bjorn Berg sounded like the Swedish chef. And I said, no, not really, because his accent's not that thick, and besides, he's Norwegian. Well, as it turns out, this isn't necessarily a mistake on my part, but credit to Joel. Swedish people, it seems, think that the Swedish chef sounds Norwegian. And in fact, when The Muppet Show is aired in Sweden, he's referred to as the Norwegian chef. Who knew? I don't know if that's actually technically correct. I get all my information from forums on the internet. But, you know, if Zimny is listening, hey, Zim, do you guys really call him the Norwegian chef? Because if so, I think that's hysterical. Okay, and now we move into the meat of it. Starting with this week, this episode, I am working on developing a new format for the show. And it's not going to be terribly different. You're not going to notice a whole lot of change. But essentially, the way I organize it, the way I put my thoughts together, is the first half of the show is going to be for me. Right? Whatever thoughts I've come up with for the week, whatever things I think, you know, I really ought to talk about that. I'm just going to have a list of topics, and some of them maybe only take me a minute or two, some of them maybe 15, 20 minutes, I have no idea. But I'm going to have my list of topics prioritized the way I want them, things that I feel like talking about, and then I'm just going to go through them until I feel like I've filled up enough time for the first half of the show. And then, you know, we'll go into the music like we always do. Then the second half of the show, as it's always been, will be for you. Second half of the show is going to be me and R2 rolling off of the Pod-O-Matic and talking about whatever comes up off the tables. And those tables are largely just constructed by you guys. So if there's anything that you want to hear me talk about, make sure you send it in. Go over to the forums and check out the Nerd Pride Radio podcast part of the forums. And there's a thread in there. Just, you know, or private message me or email me or something. But let me know what you want to hear me talk about and I'll add it to the list. Or, you know, heck, if it's really good, if I'm really interested in it, maybe I'll throw it in this first part of the show and put it with my list of topics, which, again, like everything on the show, needs a clever name yet. But I haven't gotten there. But what this means in practical terms is that I'm going to have more things that I can talk about, especially in the first half of the show, more topics available, but I will be less prepared for them because I'm not going to do a lot of the scripting ahead of time like I've done before. Not that I don't enjoy, yeah, look, I like the scripted stuff, and I like being prepared. I hate the awkward pauses. I hate, you know, feeling like I'm struggling, feeling like I'm floundering, and then I'm concentrating on, oh, God, is it a good show? Is it not? Am I doing it? And I should be focusing just on talking about the topics. And so I like having the script because it gives me a place of reference, but sometimes I feel like that also takes out some of the enthusiasm. So I'm gonna try this, and we'll just see what happens. We'll see how well this works for us. And here we go. But for the first thing on my list for this week, I have a little, I've posed myself a question that says, hey, Mike, what have you been doing for gaming stuff lately? You gotten to play at all? Have I gotten to play? Of course I have. Oh, wonderful. And it's been 4 months since our last game, but me and the guys got together and played Pathfinder, which, if you haven't played Pathfinder, it's Dungeons & Dragons. It's just the most, well, now that Dungeons & Dragons has moved on to version 4, the nice people at Paizo have decided to maintain the 3.5 rules, and they keep updating and adding new material. And I love the guys at Paizo. I love Pathfinder. I think this game is genius, but it's essentially Dungeons & Dragons. And we have a blast. And we've had this campaign going for about 2 years, and we got to play again for the first time, like I say, in a few months. And it was just, it was wonderful. We had such a good time. And for a lot of reasons. Yeah, there was some fighting and there was some mixing it up like there always is. But for the first time, I felt like everybody was really into the role-playing part of it. It was, you know, when we first started playing Pathfinder, you know, my boys had played a little bit, but the other two guys in the group were, you know, relatively new. One of them played a couple times before, and one of them had never played a role-playing game at all. And so when you come from a world where you're, maybe World of Warcraft, MMORPGs are your basis for what you're expecting from an RPG, you know, those are games where you think more mechanically. You think in terms of you know, it's kill monster, gather loot, you know, find the items that allow you to move on to your next objective, and it's all, it's much less role-playing than a real role-playing game. And so it took a little while. The first few games were mostly, you know, them biding time and waiting around for new combat to start because, well, combat is where the exciting parts were. You know, and it was new. They didn't know their characters real well, and now it's gotten to the point where we've played, you know, after a couple of years, they actually give a crap about the story. And their characters are interested in what's going on around them. And so, I mean, we spent overly much time on one of the members of the group, McDiddle's character, was trying to, I don't want to say hit on, but, you know, trying to get a date with the pretty local barmaid. We just spent a lot of time on that one with him, you know, meeting her, talking awkwardly to her. They went out a couple of times and, you know, we actually rolled some dice to see how that went. And it was just fun. We had a great time with it. And the other guys got into, you know, giving them a bad time about it, and their characters, stepped in to try and either help or make things more difficult for them. And we just had a blast. And yeah, and eventually, you know, after about 2.5 hours of, oh yeah, we're researching at the library, we're busy casting spells for healing, and oh yeah, we're talking to the bartender and his pretty daughter and blah, blah, blah. After a few hours of that, finally the guys went, you think we're going to fight anything this week? And I mean, it wasn't like a, you know, we're bored, but it was a, hey, we haven't fought anything in a long time. Maybe it's time yet? And sure enough, we got around to that. In fact, we even ended in the middle of waves and waves of enemies coming at them. So we left on a cliffhanger. I love ending on cliffhangers. And so hopefully, when we get back to the next one, which is, cross my fingers, going to be soon, you know, we can get right in the middle of that and start hacking and slashing it out. This will be a good time. I do have more to say about Pathfinder and more to talk about with this game, but I've kind of gotten used to, in the past, you know, talking about it on my old forums and the old podcasts and this, I knew that my players were not going to be around. I knew they weren't going to be a part of it. And so, therefore, I kind of felt free to say and do whatever I wanted. I'd talk about my planning and talk about, oh, here's what's coming up and here's how devious I am and here's how I'm going to mess with them. And now I kind of have to watch myself. I can't really do that. And so I'm afraid I'm going to slip and give away a little too much because they're listening. So we have to be a little more careful now. But I will, as the games go on and as my planning goes on, I do intend to talk about our Pathfinder game and any gaming that we're doing. I plan on doing all of that coming up on future episodes. So if you're into gaming, stay tuned. And if you're not, well, you know what? You'll suffer through it for the fun parts. I don't care. This is the part for me, remember? Also, Hey, Mike, since you asked, yes, I do have some other gaming news as well. I just moved all of our old gaming stuff from the old website over to the new one. And so, for those of you who don't know, my brother and I started a website together to basically support us in designing role-playing games and role-playing game materials. And as it turned out, that wound up being way more time-consuming than we imagined. And at first, you know, we set it all up and we started trying to sell our games for money, and we realized that if we're selling them for money, we're never going to make any money. I mean, you know, we had a choice to make. Either we continue to sell our games, which involves all of this extra work and advertising and promoting and organizing, all this stuff, and we wind up selling our games, and we have maybe 20 people in the world who ever see our game material, and we make $50. Or, alternately, and that's $50, actually that's quite generous, because after the cost of the website and bandwidth that my brother was paying for, technically we would have made no money. Or, alternately, we could just give our games away for free, and then, sure, we don't make any money off of it, we'll skip that $50, but then literally hundreds and thousands of people are taking a look at our games, and that's exactly what happened. Once we decided to give away all of our stuff for free, the stuff that we were most proud of, gotten people's hands, and we got lots of great feedback, and people who actually played it and cared about it, and that's what we wanted to do. We weren't in it to make money, we were in it to make games. And I'm thrilled. And, you know, had some magical RPG company with lots of money come along and wanted to pick up one of ours and start, you know, publishing it for cash or whatever, oh, we would have been happy to sell out. That's fine. But, you know, we're not holding our breath waiting for money to come around. We just wanted to do it for the fun, and it was great. And so all those materials are still just as good as they've always been and still available. So I've moved them over. If you go to the homepage for Nerd Pride Radio, you go to nerdprideradio.com, and there's a link right there in the menu at the top that says free games. And that's where you're going to find, there's 8 or 9 or 10 items in there. And it's all really good stuff. I'm not going to bore you with all the details of it. Maybe I'll save that for a later show, but I will give you the highlights. All right. First off, the number one, the big product, is Instant Game. 100 pages of instant role-playing goodness. It is a bunch of great tables, for all sorts of different stuff, so that you can jump in there. You walk in with your players, nobody's prepared anything, nobody has anything but their dice and their paper and this Instant Game book, and literally within 30 minutes you have got a brand new, completely original role-playing world with a plot, with characters ready to go, and you can start running the game right that moment. And it is glorious. We have played it a dozen times, love it, and I've used the tables for other games, Yeah, you can use it to create your own games, but you can also use it to plug into other stuff you've got. You can use it with D&D just to help you create a plot or throw in a random character somewhere or whatever. And love Instant Game. Really need to check that out. Other stuff that's in there, my brother wrote Sandbox Hill, which is rules for playing with your little green army men and having huge battles out in your yard or in your living room or wherever you're going to put them. And it involves shooting rubber bands at each other and complicated rules for moving your guys around and smashing matchbox cars with hammers. And even if you never play Sandbox Hill, go download it and read it, because it's only like 12, 16 pages long, something like that. And it's just a great read. Kyle is really entertaining. Totally worth your time. And while you're in there, also, well, maybe I won't recommend that one because I'm still using that for gameplay. I'm sorry, that was rude. But Animal Ball Melee, that's the other one. Animal Ball Melee is, maybe you don't care, but when I was a kid, I played the game Melee from Steve Jackson Games. And it was a great little game. I mean, super fast, super simple combat. I mean, it's orcs and elves and dwarves in a combat arena just tearing it up, and it's super fast combat. Not quite as fast as Rock, Paper, Scissors, but almost. And we just had a great time with it. And so I wrote Animal Ball Melee as kind of an homage to that, using the base Dungeons & Dragons Die 20 rules, but stripped it down so it's nothing but combat. And I'm really, really proud of that one. I think it's a really well done game, personally. And I've enjoyed playing that one, too. So, I mean, that's just three of the many items that are over there. Go over and take a look. And yeah, the most recent thing we published is 2007, so it's been 4 years since I've put up any real new game material. But, you know, it's me. I always have projects on the burner. I've always got stuff going on. And certainly, I'm going to add more stuff to it eventually. But, you know, right now, the focus is podcast. And so we're going to keep this going. So looking through the list of possible things I could talk about if I run out of time, I actually, just this last couple weeks, I was looking at exoplanets. Are you even familiar with them? Because I love... All right, I've already told you, I love science, I love space, astronomy, physics of all sorts. And the thing, especially with space and space travel, the thing that most intrigues me is planets. I love planets. And specifically, I've always focused on our solar system, our, you know, basic eight recognized planets plus the other, you know, 50 or more dwarf planets that we have out there. I love our solar system. And now I've been doing a little more research and seeing more articles on exoplanets. Exoplanets being planets around other stars other than our sun. And I realized that, oh, well, my fascination with our solar system is because that's pretty much all the planets we have any details on. But now we're starting to get hints of what other planets might be like. And I remember when we found the first exoplanet, and it was some, you know, massive, six times the size of Jupiter, and it was orbiting its, you know, its companion star every, you know, few minutes or a few hours. I mean, it was something that was just this gigantic hot ball of gas that was just slinging around its sun at a million miles an hour. And it was kind of unreal. I mean, it was almost like it's, you know, oh, yeah, it should have been two stars together, but the one of them just didn't quite make it. That was, you know, that was the special brother. But that's because those were the easiest kinds of planets to detect with the technology at the time. You needed, you know, if you were going to see a planet or, you know, detect the signs of a planet around another star, you needed a planet that was A, massive, and B, moving in a close, fast, regular pattern so that you could count it off and measure exactly what it was. But since then, man, our telescopes, our technology is just getting better and better. Looked up, and as of last week, we have now identified 684 planets outside of our solar system. All right, 684 exoplanets. That is a ton of planets. All right, and based on the sampling they've got, all right, that means there's probably like 50 billion planets just in our galaxy. I mean, I'm pausing for a moment to let that sink in. Maybe nobody else cares about it as much as I do. 50 billion planets. And part of it is just confirmation. I've always suspected as much. We've always, you know, just made the assumption that, well, of course there's other planets out there. Of course there's, but most stars are probably going to have some kind of solar system set up like we've got. There's going to be planets everywhere. I mean, it's just the way it is. We just can't see them yet. Well, now we can start to see them, and it turns out that, hey, we were right. And so now the search is on. Again, we start off with those massive planets, and then slowly we've been able to find far smaller and smaller planets, you know, until we were getting down to stuff that was, oh, the size of Jupiter, maybe stuff that's even smaller than our gas giants, maybe stuff because, all right, here's the thing. I pointed this out last time I brought this up, is in our solar system, Earth is the largest of the rocky planets, all right? And then Neptune is the smallest of the gas giants, and Neptune is about 14 times the mass of Earth. So that means we've got a big gap in there from one Earth to 14 Earths, and so we go from rocky to gas giant. What they're finding now is planets that are somewhere in the middle. I mean, planets that are 5 times the size of Earth, 8 times the size of Earth, 12. So where is that transition? And so what they're finding is they think, and they're trying to work out the physics, and a lot of it's just guesswork, but they imagine a lot of these are better known as gas dwarfs, giant rocky planets. Who knows? I'm just, the possibilities of what's out there is just inspiring, all right? And it's getting down to the point where the most recent ones that they're finding several planets that are maybe 3 or 4 times the size of Earth, maybe only twice the size of Earth. We haven't gotten, you know, confirmed that, yes, it's an Earth-sized or smaller planet yet. That's still pretty small to be detecting. But we're getting close. We're getting stuff that maybe is only, you know, if you got there and you stood on the surface of their planet, maybe only, you know, 1.5 G, maybe only 2 gravities. I mean, stuff that wouldn't be pleasant, but that we could survive. Stuff that we could land and walk around there. That just that's just amazing to me. All right? And in fact, the best one so far, the closest one, is HD 85512B. That doesn't mean anything to me either, but it's only 36 light years away. This has got people really excited because it's a roughly Earth-sized, a little bit bigger, a little bit heavier, but it's in the habitable zone, meaning it's about the range from its sun where you're going to find water, where you know signs of life as we know it are probably going to be easiest to find if they exist. And it's only 36 light years away, which means, if we start working on it now, we could be there in 200 years, 250? I mean, if we were traveling really fast, or maybe 4 centuries, we could do this. Okay, it's not realistic yet, but we're getting there, and it's easier to study. It's closer. We can see more of it. Hopefully, as our technology gets even better, we'll get more detail. But it occurred to me to wonder today, why are we so excited about finding Earth-like planets? Why am I so excited about finding Earth-like planets? I understand it. I understand. There's part of it that, it's something like us. If we're going to find life as we recognize it, and there's probably going to be life in all sorts of forms that we don't recognize all over, but if we're going to find life in a form that is most recognizable to us, easiest for us to go, hey, look, life, it's probably going to be on a planet similar to ours. And so that's what we're looking for. We're looking for signs of life somewhere else in the universe, signs that we're not alone. And also, the closeness of it means we're also looking for our future. At the back of everyone's mind, and I know this is centuries away yet, but at the back of everyone's mind is still that possibility of, we could go live there. This could be, when we've used up our Earth and we feel like we almost have, then, heck, this would be another place for us to go, right? This would be another planet for us to colonize and then ruin. That would be awesome. And of course, the truth of that is, though, we're probably not going to colonize any planets anytime soon. We'll send out some robot probes and we'll do some communication that way. Mostly we'll study through the radio telescopes and our other long-range tools, and we'll figure out tons of stuff before we ever get there. But it occurs to me that, if we were to ever go there, by the time we get there, we've already mastered living in space. We'll already have gotten to the point where, we'll have to have sent out our ships, our huge habitat ships, where you can have, thousands, maybe even tens of thousands of people all living on one spaceship all together, with recycling systems and the ability to gather raw materials from space and create our own food, create our own air, create our own water. By the time we get to that, because that's what we'd need to actually send out, we see on TV or movies the Ark ship with thousands, if not millions, of people in cold sleep in the cargo bay, and we send these Ark ships out to other planets. But once we've mastered being able to live in space, having a planet's not so important. I mean, it would be nice, but at this point, I actually get the feeling that we're going to wind up colonizing our solar system, that we'll have people living in the asteroid belt, we'll have people living in spaceships going around Jupiter, orbiting the sun, further out, further in, wherever. Anywhere that there's resources to be gathered, information to be found, that's where we're going to be living, and we'll build the ships to do it if there's no planet or rock to sit on at the time. And so once we've mastered that ability, and we've filled up our own solar system, and we're ready to start moving on to other stars, then we don't really need planets at the other stars. We need them for resources, but, we can continue living in our ships in space, just going around a different star. I don't know. Personally, I'm an optimist. That's what it comes down to. I believe in going to space. I believe that one day we will live in space. One day human beings will build ships that will let them move on to other systems besides this one. Long way off, yeah. But I'm an optimist. I don't think we're going to destroy ourselves. That's just too dark for me. We're going to make it. It's just a matter of when and how. And so looking at these planets, seeing that, hey, look, we're not quite there yet, but we've found a planet that is almost kind of like Earth, could almost maybe have life. Maybe we're going to find some other signs of life out there in the universe, other intelligence, someone to talk to. That's all pretty cool. Okay, did I get deep enough? I think I did. Let's do some music and break this up, because this is probably right this moment my favorite song of right now. This is one of the, and it's been for about 2 months. I love this song, play it all the time. it's the Black Keys. And yeah, I know. I think, and I don't, you know, I'm not as hooked into music culture as I ought to be, but I think on the alternate scene, I think Black Keys are pretty big. So maybe I'm not introducing you to anything new. I love these guys. I love everything they do. And this song, Next Girl, is the best of the best of what they do. So keep listening. Yeah.
The look on the cake, it ain't always a taste. My ex-girl, she had such a beautiful face. I wanted love, but not for myself, but for the girl, so she could love herself. Oh, my next girl would be nothing like my ex-girl. I made mistakes back then, I'll never do it again. Oh, my next girl. It was a painful dance, now I got a second chance.
Good stuff. Now, I've got one more from the Black Keys, but I'm going to wait just a minute. We'll play that in a bit. I like to break it up a little bit. So before we get to more Black Keys, it's time for the badass movie quote of the week. I have really got to standardize my voices. You know what? Every segment I do, I mean, I've got Mike Was Wrong, I've got badass movie quote of the week, I've got Podomatic I've got a voice for. But I feel like every time I introduce one of these segments, it's pretty much always the same voice, and so I want to break it up a bit, and then I think I just sound stupid. But I don't know. I'll come up with a system. I'm working it out. Badass movie quote of the week! Closer. All right, there it goes. Once again, I've decided, you know, I've made excuses for why I'm not coming up with actual recordings of these quotes to play for you, and I've decided no more excuses. I just like to talk. I like to talk, and I like to act very, very poorly, and I love rattling off my favorite quotes from my favorite movies, and so therefore, they're all going to be in my voice. You're going to have to deal with that. So, this week's quote. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll be brief. The issue here is not whether we broke a few rules or took a few liberties with our female party guests. We did. But you can't hold a whole fraternity responsible for the behavior of a few sick, twisted individuals. For if you do, then shouldn't we blame the whole fraternity system? And if the whole fraternity system is guilty, then isn't this an indictment of our educational institutions in general? I put it to you, Greg, isn't this an indictment of our entire American society? Well, you can do whatever you want to us, but we're not going to sit here and listen while you badmouth the United States of America. Gentlemen. That's right. That was Tim Matheson as Otter in the movie Animal House in the courtroom scene. Love that quote. Love that movie. That is actually one of the movies I have not yet shared with my kids. I make a point of sharing my nerd culture with my kids, and Animal House is not necessarily part of nerd culture, but it was a big part of my growing up. It was a movie that, you know, my dad loved, and he introduced to me, and I absolutely adore the movie. Ton of fun. One of the original teen gross-out comedies, or in that same vein. I mean, you know, American Pie owes a lot to Animal House, all right? And I love the movie. A little bit of trivia, and I just found this out a week ago. Animal House was made in 1978, but the movie is set in 1962. And for those of you who have seen Animal House, it has the very famous scene of all the Delta Tau members, the New Pledges, and everybody singing Louie Louie. All right, famous scene. And strangely, even though the movie was set in 1962, Louie Louie not released until 1963. Great. Now the whole movie's ruined for me. But let's get back to the Black Keys, because this one is my second favorite song from them, called Tighten Up. And all of the Black Keys has a very, to me, a kind of soulful, bluesy kind of feel to it. I like the emotion, the power behind it, and Tighten Up is more so than all of their others even. Love this song. Let's listen.
Bound to fall.
just before the music. Did you guys hear my dogs barking? I'm sorry if you did. Hazard of unknown dogs. They're good dogs. I went and put them away. Won't happen again. My apologies. But that leads us to the Pod-O-Matic. Thank you, R2. R2 is my best friend. For those of you who are new to the podcast, every week I do the Pod-O-Matic. I have taken the Pop-O-Matic bubble out of a game of Trouble, and specifically, it was the Star Wars version of Trouble. And I have taken out that bubble, and I have pimped it out, replaced the die inside with a couple of die tens, so I can do percentile dice. And then I roll on my table and see what we're going to talk about this week. And that becomes my Pod-O-Matic. And the R2 you hear, that is the actual bubble itself. It makes that noise. That's how it came in the box. So, where did R2 start us with today? R2 gave us number 21. This is from, it's from Anonymous, so I don't know who sent this to me. But it says, what's the deal with airline food? You know what? I have no idea. I haven't been on a plane in many years, and I don't think I've been on a flight that served a meal since I was in college. I mean, it's been 20 years. I think the flights to Japan, when my parents were living over there, I think the flights back and forth to Japan would be the last time I even had airline food, and that was probably at the height of stand-up comedians talking about airline food and making that the staple of their act. And I don't even remember it being that bad. I mean, it was, you know, but of course at that time I was used to, you know, high school lunchroom food and college dorm food, and I would know the difference. But yeah, since then, I think every flight I've ever been on has been, you know, 2 hours, 2.5 hours tops. I'm never flying through a meal. So I wouldn't know. Whoa, R2, I didn't even call Pod-O-Matic. Pod-O-Matic! But you've already got the number, so let's just go with it, huh? 23. Not even that different. This one is from Zimnipot. And Zimnipot says, what is your favorite card game at the moment? That? Do you not know me? It's Munchkin. It's always Munchkin. I love Munchkin. If you've never played it, go play it. Munchkin is a great card game by Steve Jackson Games, kind of modeled after the hack and slash method of playing Dungeons and Dragons, but essentially it's a card game where you spend a lot of time stabbing your friends in the back. The cards are extremely humorous, and so you fight comic monsters and gather hilarious equipment, and you build up levels and see who can be the first to level 10. And so you work together at times, drag each other down at times. Great game of negotiating and plotting and backstabbing, and absolutely love it. I have yet to introduce anyone to the game of Munchkin who hasn't loved it. Everybody loves Munchkin, all right? But I've talked about Munchkin a lot, and maybe a little too much. So let me give some other card games some credit, as long as Zimny is asking. I love the game Blink. Blink is a super fast card game. Every card has a number of shapes on it, and these shapes will be different colors. So you might have a card with, you know, 3 red squares, or, you know, 4 yellow diamonds, or, you know, 2 blue hearts, whatever it is. And you and your opponent each have a stack of cards. And whatever's in the middle, you look at the cards in your hand, and you just start playing as fast as you can. There's no turns, there's no order. It's if you've got something that matches, you can match shape, you can match color, you can match number. If you've got something that matches, man, you slap it down. And the cards are just fast and furious in this game. It is just flying. And it is always fun. Always a riot. Because, I mean, you are just banging these cards down, and finally your opponent goes, done! And you're looking at, like, the 4 cards left in your hand going, no, I can't. Love this game. McDiddles is actually the greatest opponent of this. I think he loves it as much as I do, and he tends to kick my butt most of the time at Blink. But like I say, it's, and anyone can play it. You know, doesn't matter how old you are. If I play against little kids, then okay, I give them a 5-card advantage or a 10-card advantage, something like that. But it's just a great fun game. Love playing Blink. What else have I got that I've been playing lately? Oh, I played Poo. A game of monkeys throwing poo at each other. And I can't really judge that one yet. I'll get back to you on that. We played a couple of rounds, and we were playing with the little kids, which I think the little kids will do all right, but the cards require a little bit of reading. which was tough, so they needed some help. But I think if we play a couple more games, they'll actually get to the point where they kind of know the cards, and they don't actually need to read them other than to look down and go, okay, it's a blue card, and it says a 4 on it, so I know what that means. And then they don't have to worry about all that text. But Poo is a game of monkeys throwing poo at each other. And, you know, you can go anywhere from, you know, little pellet poo that only, you know, sticks one piece of poo to you up to, you know, these super poos and grandpa poos and snake poo and all sorts of nasty, terrible, funny stuff. And it's a cute idea. And it's a fun, fast game. You know, is it going to be Munchkin? No. But you know, it plays quick. And that's the advantage. Games, especially games like Blank, games like Poo, a game that you can be done with in 5 minutes. Love games like that. Just something easy to throw out there. Also Flux. That's the other one that I've been playing. Flux. I love Flux, and I think most of you have played it. But Flux is just great. You have all sorts of cards in your hand that can do lots of things. But the basic rule of this game is you draw one card and then you play one card. And any card in your hand you can play. All right. And then as you play them, though, you wind up changing the rules. Okay, now the rules are changed because I played the card that says now we draw 2 and play 1. Oh, yeah, well, now we draw 2 and play 4. Now we, you know, over and over. And the rules change and the goals change. And so you have this floating goal and you're trying to reach it. And actually, typically, the most common tactic is, yeah, you know what, don't try and achieve whatever goal is out there. Come up with a goal that you're holding in your hand. And whenever you've met that goal, now try and be able to play the goal so that you've already won. It's just an interesting game. I love Flux. And Flux comes in a lot of variations. We've got, in addition to basic Flux, we also have Zombie Flux, which almost the exact same game, just with a zombie flavor to it. And that reminds me, we also have Zombie Munchkin, which I've only played once. Oh, we need to come up with a good round of Zombie Munchkin. Halloween is coming up, and we're only a month away, right? So maybe before Halloween, we will actually go through with the all-zombie night that we want to do. So, you know, play a game of Zombie Munchkin, play a game of Zombie Flux. I have the world's most awesome game, Zombie Cinema, and we'll put all these together, and then we'll watch Zombieland and Day of the Dead and some other stupid zombie movies, and we'll just have a great Halloween zombie theme party. Will we actually get to it? Now, it is one act season and everyone's kind of busy, but you know what? We really need to put this on. We need to make this happen. That's it for card games, I think. I've got a couple others, but either I have only played them once or I haven't played them at all yet. I've got a couple of games that I've been sitting on. I'm just waiting for a chance to get them out. I got Flux out first, and then Poo. I think next we're going to play Guillotine, and then I've got one other after that. But I'll keep reporting as we find them, because I love the card games. I love nice, quick stuff that you can mix it up with, you know, something to throw in between the big, long games that you're doing. You know what? I've talked too much. I think it's time for Pod-O-Matic. That's right, R2. I beat you to it that time, didn't I? What do you got for me this time? We are looking at 48. And, okay, hold on. I'm sorry. The other was, we're already at the top. Now I have to roll down. There it is. This also is from Anonymous, and it says, open a browser page, done and done. Go to the boards, the Nerd Pride Radio forums, I'm assuming they mean. All right, I'm there. And it says, go to the Nerd Talk forum and say something nice about the last person who posted in the last topic. All right, here we go. And under, oh, nope, that's Nerd Babble. Under Nerd Talk, the last person to post, oh, Sirius Paul? I couldn't have asked for better. I don't even know if he listens to the podcast. I love Sirius Paul. I have known Sirius Paul for, I don't know, 12 years? However long Bulldrek was around. In the beginning, well, even before Bulldrek. But Sirius Paul is a great dude. He can be a bit grumpy at times, a bit serious, I guess, is a better word than grumpy. Sirius Paul. Ha, I get it now. But Paul has just always been around. And there have been times that he's gotten mad and he will storm off of a board and leave. And he never says he's going to leave forever because he knows better than that. But, you know, he's fed up. He's not having fun anymore. It's just not what he expected and not what he wanted. And off he goes. And then he always comes back. because he's always looking for an experience. He's always looking for, you know, someone to talk to, someone to talk about, something going on. And Paul is just the greatest cheerleader a website could ever have. Paul, when he gets in the mood, he just starts posting. I mean, it's just, you know, Paul, it's been not uncommon for him to come in on this forum and on the old forums to come in and start 5-6 new topics in a day. You know, post up 2 or 3 things he's been thinking about, 3 news stories that he found interesting, and just wait to see what conversation happens. He just is just interested to see what everyone else is thinking right this moment. And then the conversation goes from there. Paul is just a lot of fun. And I am always thankful to have him around. In fact, this was only, a couple weeks ago that I was in the worst mood. I was tired and cranky, and I was really, really mean to Paul on the forums, and I feel horrible about it. I mean, I treated him like dirt in front of everybody. And fortunately, he didn't go storming off. He actually came and, you know, messaged me and said, "Dude, you're being a dick. What's going on?" And I thought about it, and I'm like, "Yeah, you know what? You're right." And so, you know, we made up. He stuck around. Things are going good. I like Paul. That was a good one. All right. Podomatic. Number 30. Another one from Zimny. Very good. Zim is going to dominate the Podomatic this week. Zimny says, "If your life was a movie, what movie would it be?" I have no clue. I'm talking slowly because I'm thinking about it as I talk. And, you know, here's the problem. My life is dull. And I think this is true of most people's lives. Most people's lives, not a whole lot is going on. And so, therefore, if my life were to be a movie, it would be one of those really boring ensemble cast, quirky family, you know, indie film, slice of life kind of movies. It'd be, except without the interesting parts that are in those even. So imagine the movie Dan in Real Life, Steve Carell's movie, except without, you know, sleeping with my head on a bed of pancakes, which is apparently what the movie's all about, if I can judge by the movie poster. What was that Holly Hunter flick? Home for the Holidays, except without the really interesting, quirky gay brother. There's just not a whole lot going on. So it would be one of those. If my life were a movie, I don't even have a title for it yet because I would have to put in thought ahead of time, but it would be one of those. It would be one of those little independent films that shows a quirky slice of life with your focus on 8 or 12 different family members and how they all interact and how ultimately, yes, they're all crazy, and yet they all still love each other. Ooh, except it wouldn't be quite as dramatic or interesting as that. What movie would I like my life to be? I'm so glad you didn't ask. But I'll make up the question anyway. If I had to pick a movie, well, clearly, look, I mean, I love my wife and I love my family, and I would never part with those for 1 million years. But if I had to be in a movie, if I had to live out a movie, obviously it would be Friends with Benefits, because then I would be Justin Timberlake, and I would get to spend most of my time with a naked or half-naked Mila Kunis, and there ain't nothing wrong with that. So, Podomatic! See, I've just got a ton of time here. Because this was the danger of, you know, I prepared the topics, just had a list of things to talk about, but I didn't do all the preparation. And so I had no idea how long any particular segment would go. I didn't know how much I dared to do. I'm kind of feeling my way around this. So my opening segment, my pre-music segments, didn't run as long as I normally would have, or didn't run as long as I thought they should have. So you get a lot more Podomatic this week, you lucky, lucky dogs. But R2 is tapping his little foot at me and telling me that he came up with a 90. So, bottom of the list. Again, an anonymous submission. It says, if you were going to go to a con, a convention, gaming convention, I presume, if you're going to go to a con in costume, what would you wear? Ha! Now, see, this is one I've thought about before because my son and I just went to Gen Con. And we had very, very long conversations about what kind of costume we would wear if we were going to dress up, because You know, you don't think you want to do that until you get there and you see everybody in their costumes, and then you're like, oh, I have to do that. Oh my God, I could do... When my brother and I went, we got done at the con there, and we thought, oh my God, we have to go in again next year. And when we go, the plan was I would dress up as Dr. Horrible, and he would dress up as Captain Hammer, because if you know my brother, he would be Captain Hammer, and I would be Dr. Horrible. And we were so excited about the idea. Well, then, you know, 3 years later, I finally get a chance to go again. I take my son. By this time, the thrill has worn off. It's like, oh, well, you know. Yeah, I could come up with something, but that seems like a lot of work, isn't it? And then we get there, and I'm like, oh, God, I need a costume. What would I do if I were going to... Okay, so I've thought about it, and right now what I've settled on is I need some kind of combination costume, something that takes two very recognizable elements and puts them together. So, for example, well, not for example, this is the costume that I would settle on right this moment. I want to be Canadian Vader, all right? So I would be from the waist down, all right? I would be a Canadian lumberjack. I'd have on my big boots and my sturdy work pants, and I'd probably even have a belt with a big X on it, all right? And then from the waist up, I would, oh, and maybe some maple syrup. You got to carry the maple syrup, otherwise people won't know what you are. And then from the waist up, Darth Vader. All right, with the whole cape and the mask and the whole business. And then, anytime anyone asks you about your costume, you get to do your impression of Bob and Doug from Strange Brew and go, I am your father, eh? See? Awesome. That's, in fact, you can do a Canadian version of virtually any costume. Again, I obviously had a lot of discussion about this. You could be the Canadian Terminator. All right, all you need is a Canadian, or a Canadian, get yourself a Schwarzenegger mask, a Terminator mask, dress up as the Terminator, but make sure that you end every sentence with A. So it'll be, I'll be back, eh? Suddenly you're Canadian. This is awesome. You can translate anything into Canadian with this simple trick. So that would be my con costume, would be Canadian Vader. Probably Canadian anything, really. But Canadian Vader, I think, would be the easiest and most recognizable. Have I talked too long about this one? Podomatic. Oh, R2, all the way back to the top of the list, because R2 rolled a 3. Back to the top. This is from Stan. Wolverine, cool or just grumpy? You know what? Wolverine sucks. I am so tired of Wolverine, I can't even stand it. He is so overhyped and so overdone, and I don't follow comics anymore. I just do the movies. But from what I can tell, Wolverine is pretty much an indestructible force of nature by this point. All right, he's no longer the cool guy that he used to be, where he had the claws and he was edgier and darker and more violent than everybody else. But, you know, he still got hurt like everybody else. And his healing factor would save him ultimately. But he was much more of a dark knight, much more of a detective, much more of a, the hunter, the tracker, the wild child. And now he's just a super ninja. He's just an unstoppable, indestructible super ninja. And I'm bored with him. I'm just tired of, you know what, Wolverine can win anything because it doesn't matter what you do to him. He'll heal. Oh, he'll always heal. Drives me crazy. So cool or just grumpy? Well, since I've eliminated cool, Stan, that means the answer is Wolverine is just grumpy. Podomatic. Number 29. Why does Mike love exclamation marks? You know what? I can only imagine that this has to do with the tournaments and the hero battles and stuff like that, because I do, in fact, use a lot of exclamation marks, especially when we do hero battle, because I don't know why. Something about hero battle, I made the decision the first time we played, and we've done, 20 or 30 games of hero battle on the forums now. I made the decision in the first game that every single thing I say as the moderator of a hero battle will always end in an exclamation point, period. Always, 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 always. And so, because to me, that's kind of funny. So that even when I'm clarifying rules or even when I'm, offering an explanation or a condolence or just a random comment, it still ends with an exclamation point. So everything, everything is extremely important and really exciting to me. And so therefore, I use a lot of them for that. But outside of that, not really that fond of it. Because I think in other contexts, you know, it's like typing in all caps. I think it implies yelling, and it's just a little overdone. I find myself using a few more of them nowadays, especially in, you know, personal exchanges, you know, thank yous and little notes to other people. Because, you know, especially when you say thank you and you put the little exclamation point on it, you know, a little more emphasis that I really appreciate that. Thanks. That kind of stuff. But otherwise, yeah, I don't know where this came from. It had to be the Hero Battle stuff. Do all of you know about Hero Battle, by the way? Amanda, obviously everyone who's on the site does. But if you've not come to the forums, Hero Battle is, it's a common forum game. It's not original to me. I completely and totally ripped it off from the HeroScape forums, who in turn completely and totally ripped it off from some other forum they saw. I don't know where this thing originated. But the idea is you come up with a list of characters, and everybody who's playing in the game gets a character. And everybody starts off with 10 hit points. And then, every round, each person gets to hit two people and heal one. In fact, sometimes the game is actually called Hit, Hit, Heal, or Hit, Heal. And so, you get to hit two people and heal one person. And eventually, anyone who's reduced to 0 hit points is dead and out of the game. The object, obviously, is to be the last person left, but it has the added twist of you have to maintain your secret identity. Nobody's allowed to know who you're playing, because if they guess which character is yours, then they can call you out, and then you wind up losing points. And it's just a lot of fun. I mean, you can't play too many in a row, because they start to get repetitive. But, you know, you play one, and then you break it up, you do something else for a little while, and then you come back a couple weeks later, and you start up a new game. And each one, you know, a turn is a day, so each one takes about 3 weeks to play out. But it's real simple to play. You know, you sign up for it, and then you put in 5 minutes a day just to do your, oop, hit, hit, heal, and then you're back out. But 5 minutes a day over the course of 3 weeks until eventually you're one man standing, and there's your winner. Ton of fun. And that's where my exclamation point fetish came from, I suppose. So, how much time do we have left? You know what? Let's do one more. Podomatic. Oh, I thought I could fool him, but R2 comes up with it anyway, and he rolls. It's a 48 again. We already did that one. Okay, let's try a 37 this time. All right, 37 anonymous submission. And it says, what the hell happened to Eddie Murphy? Oh, dude, tell me about it. There's several opinions I have about Eddie Murphy. But first off, when I was in high school, Eddie Murphy was the single funniest thing going, maybe second only to George Carlin. Eddie Murphy Raw and Eddie Murphy Delirious, those stand-up specials were just knock-down, drag-out, funny, spectacular. And his time on Saturday Night Live, he was in a bunch of really bad seasons of Saturday Night Live. He was the only funny thing on there, and for good reason. He was brilliant. And then he did Beverly Hills Cop. We saw Trading Places and 48 Hours before that even. The guy could do no wrong. I mean, he was a master of his craft, right? Okay, so now what's Eddie Murphy? Eddie Murphy is the thing he can probably be most proud of in the last decade would be he's the voice of Donkey from all the Shrek movies. And even that's wearing a little thin, right? I mean, Shrek was funny. Shrek 2 was all right. Shrek 3 was a piece of junk. I mean, and that's the highlight of his last 10 years. I mean, other than that, the Nutty Professor movies, the, what was that? Norbert? Oh, apparently any role where he can wear a fat suit. I don't know what's wrong with him and Martin Lawrence. They feel like they got to wear a fat suit in every movie. Is black dudes in fat lady suits funny somehow? I don't get it. It doesn't work for me. From what I understand, and I haven't done any research on this at all, but what I've been told is Eddie Murphy got into a really bad movie contract way back when, where he agreed that he was going to have to do, you know, 6 movies or 10 movies or whatever from some studio that he no longer had any faith in or didn't want to work with. And they kept shipping him crappy roles, and he said, yeah, fine, whatever, I'll do whatever you want. All right, let's just get it over with. We'll crank these suckers out, be done with it as fast as we can, and we're out of here. And Except, of course, he said it like Eddie Murphy, and if I could do an Eddie Murphy impression, I would, but I can't. And I think, I'm sure that contract has to be long over. He's been doing crap for ages. So I assume he got through that contract, but then by that point, he didn't have anything left. You know, by the time you get done with Daddy Daycare and the Nutty Professor movies and this, I mean, he's got himself pigeonholed as, oh, the Dr. Doolittle movies. Oh, my God, those are terrible. He's got himself pigeonholed as the guy who does, as the washed-up former funny man who now does really, really stupid family movies, really, really stupid remakes of stuff. And that's all he is. And I think once he got pegged as that, even after the contract was up, well, now he's not bankable. I mean, you know, here he thought he was just going to get this garbage out of his way, and now there's nothing left for him. Nobody wants to put Eddie Murphy in a serious movie. I mean, you know, what did he do? He did that spy movie with Owen Wilson? Was that him? You know, that didn't pull off anything for him. That was a piece of garbage. He's tried a few to kind of get his image back, ones that you can tell that this is where, okay, I'm going to make a real mainstream comedy, now I'm going to do something really, you know, more Beverly Hills Cop-ish, more back to my good old days, and he's just not doing it. But more than that, Eddie Murphy is, that's I think what happened to Eddie Murphy. But now also, since he hasn't done stand-up, I mean, he's been just a movie star, and at this point, you know, a B or C grade movie star for many years. He hasn't been putting out new comedy of his own. And so all that stuff that was hysterical back in 1987, 1989, you know, it's been a long time since then. It's been 20 years since then, 25 almost for some of his early stuff. Go back and watch Eddie Murphy Raw, and you'll find out that a lot of it is really stupid. I mean, it's really racist, obviously. But when, you know, when he does his drunk uncle or his drunk father or stuff like that, you realize it's not funny. It's just kind of sad. I mean, he's doing, you know, he's giving you a slice of real life, and I don't know what we thought was funny about it at the time other than he's doing a funny drunken voice. But drunken child abuse just isn't as funny as it used to be, I suppose. When he does his bit on gays and he does his bits on AIDS, dude, that's just homophobic. That's just, it's ignorant. Him and Sam Kinison have the same trouble. They both had this similar gay and AIDS material. They both came out about the same time. They had very similar material on the topics. And it just wasn't funny. I mean, it was at the time. At the time, I remember thinking it was hysterical. But now, no, it's, you know, it might as well be, you know, doing racist humor. It's just, it's so blatantly ignorant of the realities of who people are. And, you know, for a disease like AIDS, you know, now we know so much more about how AIDS spreads and how it affects people and who's vulnerable to it and all of that. That nowadays that material just comes off as really ignorant. And there's a lot of Eddie Murphy stuff that's like that. So Eddie Murphy has the dual problems of his humor was very locked into that time period and has not aged well. And therefore, I don't think Eddie Murphy's old stuff, the stuff that made him famous and was really, really cutting edge and funny at the time, it does not translate and it doesn't make him accessible to a modern audience in any way, shape, or form. And then he has the added detriment of having produced really, really garbage movies for whatever reason. And you know, he started on that path and there's no coming off of it. So poor, poor Eddie Murphy. That's what I think happened to Eddie Murphy. If anyone wants to add to this, start some discussion, and I am happy to do a new Mike Was Wrong segment next week, and we'll talk about Eddie Murphy some more, because I'm sure that's what fascinates my audience. Okay, that wraps it up for this week. I feel awesome, don't you? All right, is that corny? Because, you know, because seriously, I'm good enough. I'm smart enough. And doggone it, people like me. So, this podcast is Oppenheimer! This podcast is copyright 2011 by Nerd Bride Radio. The opening and closing theme is from Sabotage by the Penelopes. Our music this week was the songs Next Girl and Tighten Up from the Black Keys. I love them. If you feel like doing something nice for this podcast, head on over to iTunes. Write a nice review. If you want to contact me, well, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com, but that's not really worth your time. You could check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio, but to be totally honest, the best way to talk to me is to come sign up for our forum, nerdprideradio.com/forums. Sign up. Send me a message. Hang out. We'll have fun. We'll be cool. Born dash born der it to get to goo. Orn dash di born dash di bork bork bork.